West House Tour, produced by the Old Island Restoration Foundation, continuing its 54th season of opening doors for you on February 14th and 15th. Free admission to Garden Fest is a bonus. Details at oirf.org. Brought to you by the Monroe County Tourist Development Council.
And it is today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. Bonnie, we've been hearing a lot from you this morning and this afternoon with our special Valentine's Day offer.
Another way to be happy.
Another way to be happy.
Right.
Well, isn't everyone's overall goal to be happy? Yet why do so few of us achieve it? Joining us now is psychologist, lecturer, and author Tal Ben-Shahar. He lectures at Harvard University. They've been widely popular. His latest book is Choose the Life You Want, 101 Ways to Create Your Own Road to Happiness. And Tal Ben-Shahar joins us from Tel Aviv. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Thank you for having me on your show today.
Well, thank you for being with us. So we usually think of happiness as a state of mind and emotion. Is it actually a science?
Today it is. About 15, 16 years ago, a new field within psychology was found called positive psychology, which is the science of life flourishing or the science of happiness. And today we have ways of measuring it, increasing it, cultivating it in our lives, in our schools, in our organizations, in our communities.
I couldn't help but think, you know, you lecture to the Fortune 500 companies and multinational corporations and universities and just to the public at large. I was thinking, wouldn't it be great if you could go to Congress and lecture in the government?
Well, I'm waiting for that phone call.
I think it would be really good, especially that win-win, but we'll get to that later.
You say that we can be happier through exercise. I assume you mean mental, not physical.
I actually mean both.
Okay.
Yes. So there are mental exercises that we can use to increase our happiness. For example, exercising our quote-unquote positivity muscle. You know, our negativity muscle is very often trained because of what we're exposed to day in and day out, whether it's in much of the news, whether it's through stories people tell. We tend to gravitate toward the negative, and we don't exercise the positive muscle enough. And we can do that by appreciating what we have, for example, being grateful. But then it's not just the mental, cognitive muscle that we need to exercise, also the physical muscles. So there's a lot of research today showing that regular physical exercise significantly increases our well-being, makes us happier. It's also one of the best ways to ward off depression, anxiety, attention deficit disorder, and so on.
Is that the endorphin effect, partly?
Partially the endorphin effect, though it does so much more than that. Today we know that it releases norepinephrine, mm-hmm. serotonin, dopamine. These are all your feel-good chemicals in the brain. It works just like, in the same way as our most powerful psychiatric medication does.
So do you believe happiness is always a choice that we can make for ourselves?
We can always become happier, though there are, of course, external circumstances that are very tough to overcome by choice. I mean, think of people who live in a war-torn area,
exactly.
Or in dire poverty. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to say to them, it would be unfair to say to them or expect them to be happy, to make a choice to be happy given their circumstances. But barring extreme circumstances, we can usually make the choice to become happier.
So you're a proponent of positive psychology. I'm not sure what that is exactly, but is there an element of, I don't know, I kind of see a happy Labrador dog wagging his tail.
Actually, one of my teaching assistants just completed her PhD on how animals can make us happier. So that lab can certainly, his or its happiness is contagious. Happiness is not just pleasure. It's not just metaphorically wagging your tail and experiencing joy at the moment or pleasure in the moment. It goes way beyond that, or it's much deeper. It's also about a sense of meaning. And this sense of meaning we get from things such as feeling that we're contributing to others, from doing something that is personally meaningful. And that is the happiness that positive psychology researchers. Yeah, of course, pleasure is important, but it's only a small part of the equation.
I've heard people say that, a few people anyway, that the only thing that really makes them happy is when they do make other people happy. Is that common?
Absolutely. You know, it's actually one of the most powerful generators of happiness. It's increasing other people's happiness. You know, it's a two-way street. When we make others happy, we become happier. And it's a wonderful thing. I mean, think about it. This being part of our nature, that we were made so that we would benefit when we benefit others. Win-win.
How important is just knowing that we have other options, and perhaps no matter the way things appear? Is that a key to understanding that we can choose, barring the dire circumstances that you spoke of, that you can choose happiness?
Absolutely. In fact, this is something that is an innate part of our nature. So we already see with babies, you know, a few months old, when they are given a choice of, say, picking the music that will play in their crib, versus when they're not given a choice, they're a lot more agitated, a lot less happy when they don't have a choice. So it's something that we're born with, this need to choose. We see it at every age. There's research on the adult population showing that when we don't have a choice, that is very often the beginning of depression.
Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah, so choice is a very important part of a happy and fulfilled life, and that goes hand in hand, of course, with freedom. Freedom to choose, and which is why we see politically that the only real change to levels of happiness on a macro level, on a societal level, come when there is freedom or when there is lack of freedom. So countries where people feel that they don't have the basic freedoms are unlikely to be happy. That's one of those very powerful external circumstances that affect our well-being. And that has to do with choice.
Do you consider yourself happy, and what makes you happiest?
You know, I must say it's a difficult question for me to answer, and here is why. So first of all, I got into this whole field of positive psychology, the science of happiness, because I was unhappy. And over the years, I have become happier. Now, it's very difficult for me to say, am I happy now versus yesterday when I wasn't happy? I can't say, because happiness is not a binary either or. So it's not that there isn't a point, a tipping point before which you're unhappy, after which you are. Rather, happiness lies on a continuum. So I can certainly say that today I'm happier than I was 20 years ago when I embarked on this journey. But I certainly hope that 10 years from now, or even 5 years from now, I will be happier than I am today.
You said your initial interest in positive psychology sprang from your own desire to lead a happier life, but you said you also had a thing about perfectionism. Has that changed for you?
Right. Also, similarly to the way happiness is, you know, I always begin my lectures on perfectionism by saying, good evening, my name is Tal, and I'm a perfectionist. You know, it's something that... That remains with us.
You know, right.
Karen Horney, who is one of the most important 20th century psychologists, she said that neuroses of all kind, whether it's the very severe debilitating neuroses or less severe ones, stay with us. They don't go away. We can certainly reduce the impact that they have on us, but it's always there. And today we understand why, because we can actually see traces in the brain, even after we have, so to speak, extinguished a powerful tendency such as perfectionism is. It's still there. It's still nagging. It's still part of our lives, but to a lesser extent. And this is what I feel personally. It's still there, but to a lesser extent.
Yeah, because you said that inner voice is not always helpful or the kindest voice.
Right. You know, we tend to be our own harshest critics. Yeah, we also have the tendency to rationalize our activity. We also have the tendency to want to look good in the when others are watching. But you know, deep inside, many of us have a very critical voice, a voice that we wouldn't under any circumstances unleash on our friends, for example. You know, I mean, think of a perfectionist who can be very harsh on him or herself for, say, not getting an A if they're students, or for making a mistake, even a small mistake at work. And they would never treat their friends that way. You know, one of the sentences that I talk about is a take on the golden rule. So the golden rule is, do not do unto others what you would not have done unto yourself.
Right.
And you know, I've talked about the platinum rule, which is do not do unto yourself what you would not do unto others. It's no less important.
We're speaking with Tal Ben-Shahar. He's an expert on happiness, former professor of positive psychology at Harvard, psychologist, teacher, author, lecturer. And this latest book is Choose the Life You Want, 101 Ways to Create Your Own Road to Happiness. We're going to take a short break. We'll come back and take some calls and emails.
Our local economy is not dominated by big corporations, but rather by small companies. I'm Tom Hudson. Join us tonight at 7 for a pledge special of the Sunshine Economy. Small business owners thinking big in South Florida. Made possible by Kaufman Rawson.
Valentine's Day is right around the corner, and you can show that special someone in your life how much they mean to you by giving to WLRN.
Make a contribution of $100, and WLRN will send your spouse or significant other a beautiful arrangement of 18 red roses, along with your personal message from Field of Flowers.
And they'll be delivered in time for Valentine's Day, anywhere in Miami-Dade, Broward, or Palm Beach counties.
It's a great way to take care of your loved one and help WLRN at the same time.
You can give online at WLRNradio.org or by calling 1-866-247-9576. Thanks.
And we return 19 and a half minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. And we're speaking with psychologist, lecturer, author Tal Ben-Shahar. And again, as Bonnie said, his book is Choose the Life You Want, 101 Ways to Create Your Own Road to Happiness. He's joining us from Tel Aviv. If you'd like to join us, that's easy enough. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. And also email. That might be quicker. That's radio@WLRN.org. Bonnie?
And I just want to say that, and I'm going to try and say, I talked to my Israeli friend. It's Tal Ben-Shahar, right? Is that the correct pronunciation?
Yes.
Okay. He is going to be delivering 3 seminars on habits of happiness next week. He's going to be February 16th in Boca Raton, February 17th in North Miami, and February 18th in Palm Beach. And you can get the information and register at habitsofhappiness.org. That's habitsofhappiness.org.
Tell me, you talk about that you have a problem with the, quote, go with the flow mentality, and I think that's what most people want to do, is just kind of go with the flow, not be too high or not be too low.
So, you know, sometimes it's the right thing to do, and sometimes it, often it can provide this a pleasure or just, you know, sort of floating along. But sometimes and often, It's a way of avoiding thinking. It's a way of avoiding the effort that it takes to make significant important changes in our lives. It's a way of getting away from the responsibility that we have toward ourselves and others. So, you know, the ancient Greeks often talked about moderation. And when we go with the flow, we need moderation. Sometimes it's the right thing to do, but sometimes we need to do the hard work that it takes to lead a full and fulfilling life. You know, and that goes to a significant issue around the study of happiness. You know, many people think that, well, happiness is just, okay, just be happy. You know, don't worry, be happy. But, you know, sometimes we need to worry. Sometimes we need to struggle. Sometimes we need to work hard, to fall down and to get up again. And that's as important part of a full and fulfilling life as just going with the flow, just having fun, just experiencing pleasure.
You know, one thing that occurs to me going back for just a moment, obviously someone who feels trapped and without options is going to have a problem. And you were saying how it's our nature, like a baby, if they can choose their own music, will be happier. But it occurs to me that sometimes having too many choices can also be a problem and cause a lot of anxiety. Have you found that?
Oh, very much so. So this is a wonderful research, which is done by Barry Schwartz from Swarth College. And he has published a book and studies on the tyranny of choice. And what he shows there is that in today's world, given the amount of choice that we have, that can actually hurt our levels of happiness more than help. And if I can just give a very simple example, you know, in the past, we didn't have much choice, or at least we didn't perceive ourselves as having much choice about the career that we would have. So, you know, mostly if our if we were men. If our father was a carpenter, in all likelihood would be a carpenter or something close to it, maybe something our uncle was. If we were women, you know, if your mother would probably have been a housewife and you would have been a housewife. So it wasn't much choice about what we did. And again, that's not so long ago. You know, we're talking less than 100 years ago, that was the norm. Today, and it's a wonderful thing. Today we have a lot more choice. You know, certainly women have a lot more choice, men have a lot more choice, and it's a good thing to a point. Once again, moderation. Because if I know that I can do anything with my life, and let's say I choose to become a lawyer, then I will very often be thinking, wait, but you know, I could have been a doctor, and my friend seems happier having gone into teaching, and you know, I want to spend more time with the children. So the fact that we have more choice can also take away from our happiness. And that also has to do with our perfectionist tendencies.
What about... sorry, go ahead.
Because it's no longer enough to find to make a good choice or to have a good life. We need the perfect choice, the perfect life. Mm-hmm. And given that we have so many choices, we don't give ourselves any leeway. Because I have no excuse for not being happy at work, given that I have so much choice. I have no excuse for not being happy in my life, given that I have so much choice in so many areas. And just that thought actually leads to unhappiness.
I'm thinking that choice is a big responsibility, actually, when it comes down to it, because it means that it's all on you, you know?
Yes, exactly. It's no longer your circumstances or the fact that you were born in this family or that family.
Right.
And of course, that still has an effect, but less so than in the past. So yes, and you know, with responsibility also comes taking responsibility, full responsibility for your happiness or unhappiness.
Mm-hmm.
What about traumatic events that throw us for a loop? For example, let's say the loss of a child to illness or accident, and one says, well, I can never be happy again. And yet somehow we do survive that. But can we ever truly be happy after something like that?
Well, If we're talking about happiness as just mere pleasure, then it would be more difficult. If we're talking about a sense of meaning and purpose, then it is possible. But here with traumatic life events, first of all, the most important thing is time, because time, not always, but sometimes and often, heals. But it's about going through the pain and crying and breaking down before being able to build up again. And again, for different people, it's different. You know, there's a lot of research in psychology, of course, about the post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, so people who have lost someone dear to them, or people who were exposed to a traumatic event, whether it's war or experienced abuse, and there are certain things that we can do to heal, to help post-traumatic stress disorder. At the same time, what we also see is that some people, not all, but some people experience growth as a subsequently after a traumatic experience. So there is the phenomenon which psychologists call post-traumatic growth. And in order to increase, you can never ensure it, you can never guarantee it, but in order to increase the likelihood that you will experience post-traumatic growth rather than post-traumatic stress disorder, what's important is to find meaning either in the event or in the things that you do after the event. Of course, sharing, talking about it, having a supportive environment is critical, is important, and naturally time is an important factor.
This discussion reminds me of a guest I had a few years back, also with strong Harvard connections, perhaps you know him, psychologist Dan Gilbert. And he tells the story about conjoined twins who were offered that they could safely be surgically separated and lead separate lives. And they were happy the way they were. They chose to remain conjoined. So happiness is a very relative term.
Yes, very much so. And Daniel Gilbert was my teacher when I was a graduate student. So, and his work is very important. What he does, what he has shown, is that happiness is very often misleading. So people truly believe that they will find happiness, say, in the next success, or in making a lot of money, or in becoming famous. And he says, you know, all these events certainly lead to a spike in our levels of well-being, but it's a temporary spike. So the example that he gives, for example, are professors that have just received tenure. And you know, they are sure that they will be happy for the rest of their lives, when in fact, 3 months later, they're back where they were at the beginning. Or on the other side, you find people who experience, you know, a traumatic event or a loss and think, well, I could never be happy. But then a year or two later, they're happy and experience a sense of meaning and purpose again, even though they believe that they never would. So we're a lot more resilient for good and ill, because we also, quote-unquote, recover from very positive experiences.
Is it similar to the body's immune system, that we have a psychological sort of immune system?
Yes, it's actually a perfect analogy. So we have a very strong psychological immune system, which, interestingly, is connected to the body's immune system, which is why, going back to what we discussed earlier about physical exercise, what psychologists and neuroscientists are showing is that when we exercise on a regular basis, we actually become not just physically stronger, we become psychologically stronger. We become more resilient.
We're speaking with Tal Ben-Shahar. His latest book is Choose the Life You Want, 101 Ways to Create Your Own Road to Happiness. And he will be in South Florida starting next week, the 16th. And for information about that, you can go to habitsofhappiness.org. I just wanted to switch gears for a second, because I heard you, it was a very brief little lecture you gave, and you said that by externalizing everything about ourselves through social networking, it's hurting our potential for growth. And I found that very interesting, even though it's not about happiness necessarily, but of course it relates to it because growth, I would think, leads to happiness. So how do you see that happening?
Yes, so once again, allow me to go back to moderation. I think social networks are wonderful. You know, I know many people who are very close to me are in lovely relationships thanks to social networks. It has given me and others an opportunity to, you know, to connect, reconnect with childhood friends. There are many wonderful things about social networks. At the same time, we're overdoing it. You see, one of the best predictors of happiness is having a strong, intimate, close relationships. Now, unfortunately, 1,000 friends on Facebook are no substitute for that, you know, one BFF, one best friend forever. And you know, I see students, whether in college or younger students, who are sitting next to one another and they're texting sometimes one another, and we're missing out a lot. We're missing on that intimate, close connection, on the feelings we develop, on the conflicts that we have in the sandbox or in a face-to-face argument. Or the wonderful experiences that we have, potentially can have together. And I'm very concerned about the fact that we're losing that. And what we need to do, what we all need to do and encourage, whether our children, whether our partners or friends, we need to disconnect at times so that we can connect, really connect to other people. Again, moderation.
Our telephone number, 1-800-743-9576, if you'd like to join in our discussion. 1-800-743-WLRN, email radio@WLRN.org. First up, we have Warren in Del Rey.
Thank you for letting me participate today. Mr. Shahar, what you said before concerning happiness and not doing the golden rule was said by the great sage Hillel, who about justice. He said, "Do not do unto others that which you would find hateful if done to you." About perfectionism, my friend, the late Jack Kirby, the great cartoonist and writer who, among other things, co-created the Fantastic Four and their arch-villain Dr. Doom, once said to me, "Dr. Doom is a perfectionist. And perfectionists are not happy people." With regard to the duration of happiness, the Academy Award-winning actress Louise Reiner, when once asked about it, replied, "Happy, what is happy?" And she tried to explain, I think, that happiness is not, this is, has to do with perfectionism, I guess, also, not a constant thing, but we try to achieve moments of happiness in this sea of difficulty. One little correction, please, from a former medical proofreader. The part of the body that gives you defenses against illness is the immunity system, not the immune system. Nothing is truly immune. Thank you very much for today's program and the great words from Mr. Shahar.
Thank you, Warren.
Thank you for your call.
Okay.
Thank you, Warren.
Yes.
And I'd like to just say a couple of words about those moments of happiness. The thing about those moments is that they are they're not enclosed, so to speak. They have a trickle effect. So if I experience even, you know, three moments at, you know, different times during the day, their effect goes beyond those moments, and it strengthens our immunity system, and it also contributes to our well-being throughout the day. You know, so many people ask me, you know, how can you talk about happiness, say to a say, a single mom who has two or three jobs just to get enough food on the table for her kids. Mm-hmm. That's a luxury that is for the for the rich or at least very least the middle class. And my answer is yes, it is easier usually when we don't have to work at three different jobs and when we have some free time. However, the finding, and this is consistent finding in the field, is that even if we find, again, 5 minutes here and there or 2 or 3 hours over the weekend to do something that is personally meaningful, something that we enjoy, that has an effect on the time that comes before and the time that comes after. That we look forward to, and it's something that we look back on fondly.
I've had elder relatives of mine say that they were happiest during the Depression because they were closest and they had a common battle of poverty that made them closer and happier.
And for a simple reason, as you mentioned, it's because they were closer to one another, and relationships are much, much better predictors of happiness than money. And again, I'm not talking extreme circumstances of poverty. But once we have our basic needs met, relationships are a lot more important.
And we'll take another call. This is Henry. He's in Boca. Thanks for your patience, Henry. Hi.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call. The reason I'm calling, we're often accused of being a overly materialistic society, and the pursuit of money is often criticized, and it's commonly believed that money can't buy happiness. And my contention is that money can buy happiness, as, for example, the ability to buy more education, the ability to buy better health, etc. So I feel that the pursuit of money as a means of accomplishing these things is a healthy thing. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering how your guest responds.
Okay, thank you.
Good. It's a great point. Thank you. So there are a few issues around money. The first is, do we see money as an end, or as you mentioned, do we see money as a means? It's a lot healthier to see money as a means. In fact, people who have as their ultimate goal to make more money are actually consistently less happy than people who have other goals.
A lot of rich people commit suicide.
Yes, and a lot of very successful people do that, whether it's through direct suicide or reverting to drugs and alcohol. But there is also a lot of research showing how money can contribute to happiness. And let me mention two. One is, as I mentioned earlier, is by giving. We get, knowing that we have contributed in a meaningful way to the lives of others by donating money to a cause we believe in, by helping people, actually contributes to well-being, and this is a well-documented finding in the field. But there is something else, which is, to some people, not to all, but to some people, surprising. So if you ask people, what would make you happier? Let's say you've just received a bonus at the end of the year, and you have a choice of either buying you've already got a car, but you can buy a newer, better car, or go on a family vacation. And it's a car that you've been thinking of that you really want, or go on a vacation with people you care about and who care about you. What would make you happier for longer? Many people would say, well, the car, because I'm going to have the car for the next 3 years or 5 years or whatever. I'm going to enjoy it every day. Whereas a vacation, it's 2 weeks and then it's over. Well, it turns out that they're wrong, that experiences contribute to happiness a lot more than things. Once again, after our basic needs are are fulfilled, once we have the basic things that we need, and I'm talking basics here,
right?
Experiences actually contribute more to our happiness. Why? Because, first of all, the experience is positive, and as I mentioned earlier, this has a trickle effect. But also there are the memories. It also strengthens relationships. You know, this was brought home to me just recently. We celebrated my dad's birthday, and it was just one evening where all the friends got together, his friends, you know, our family friends. It was one evening, but that kept us going, fueled us for months, just talking about it and remembering the experiences. And then it has it spirals up, because we talk about it, and then we talk about other things, and then the next time we continue, and the relationship improves, and so on and so on. So investing money in experiences rather than things is usually a better deal if we're talking about the currency of happiness.
We have an emailer. It's your Aunt Dee Dee. And she said she wants to say hello to you. And she said when she first heard the promo, she thought her life might be happier by having dinner with you in Miami tonight. But now she realizes you're not here. And then she says she listens to WLRN all day, and that makes her happy. Public radio makes her happy. But anyway, she said to say hello to you.
Well, please tell her that I love her and I can't wait to see her.
Okay, well, I'm sure she's listening.
Good.
I wanted to ask you, this was interesting, and maybe it was an oversight on my part or maybe not, but when I was preparing for today's program, I noticed that there was something I came upon. It said, your six steps for happiness. And then I did some more research, and I found there were seven steps for happiness, and that the seventh one was that the number one predictor of happiness is the time we spend with people we care about and who care about us. Did you add that, like, sometime later?
You know, a lot of these, the number of steps is arbitrary, because I could just as well write 200 steps to happiness, or three. The reason I added it is because more and more research came out showing just how powerful relationships are to happiness, and it was just something that I knew that if I don't mention it, then it would it would go against all that research, and I also mentioned it because it's so important to do so in today's world, when relationships are taking a back seat. They're taking a back seat to people's commitment to other values, to other goals. And I'm not against other values and other goals. I'm not against making money, and I'm not against working hard, and I'm not against success. At the same time, if they come at the expense of relationships, that's when the problems begin.
Yeah, it's very interesting. We're speaking with Tal Ben-Shahar, and his latest book is Choose the Life You Want, 101 Ways to Create Your Own Road to Happiness. A short break, and we'll return.
Calling all companies. Registration is now open for the 2014 Mercedes-Benz Corporate Run. This annual event promotes camaraderie, team spirit, and company morale. All companies, large or small, know that a healthy employee makes for a healthy company. So you should spread the word that fitness can be fun and sign up today. In West Palm Beach, Fort Lauderdale, and downtown Miami, your first step towards fitness can be the Mercedes-Benz Corporate Run. Details at teamfootworks.org or 305-666-RACE.
Surprise your loved one for Valentine's Day by giving a $100 gift to WLRN.
When you do, we'll send her 18 red roses beautifully arranged in a glass sphere from Field of Flowers.
Or up the wow factor with a contribution of $150 and send 30 red roses. Delivery is available in the Tri-County area, and you can include a personal greeting.
To order, just go online to WLRNradio.org. It's a great way to get two important things done at one time.
That's WLRNradio.org, or call 1-866-247-9577.
And And welcome back to Monday's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Tal Ben-Shahar. And his latest book is Choose the Life You Want, 101 Ways to Create Your Own Road to Happiness. And he will be in South Florida starting on February 16th, Boca, February 17th, North Miami, February 18th, Palm Beach. Info at habitsofhappiness.org.
And now you got to see Aunt Dee Dee.
Yeah.
Well, we were planning on seeing each other anyway because relationships are the most important predictor of happiness.
That is really important. That's such an important finding.
Yes, you know, and you see it on the individual level when you look at when you study people's lives. If you look at the happiest people and compare them to the less happy people, the one distinguishing characteristic is, do they have close, intimate relationships? And these relationships can be family relationships, they can be friends, they can be, you know, a whole number of relationships. But there is another interesting finding also relating to relationships, and that is on the macro level. The happiest countries in the world are not necessarily countries that you would expect to be the happiest. Here are a few of them that usually make the top 10 on the different studies. So countries like Denmark, Holland, Colombia,
Iceland.
Israel
is in there too.
Iceland, Australia, and some of them you would say, oh yeah, okay, you know, I can see Australia, you know, great weather, great surfing, good life. But why countries like Colombia or Israel, who have their, you know, their fair share of trouble? And the one common distinguishing characteristic among all these countries, no exception, is strong social relations. And the strong social relations look different in different countries. You know, in Colombia and Israel, you know, family is very strong, cohesive family nucleus. Countries like Denmark, family is not, you know, as high value, but friendship is. You know, Australia, similar. So you see, in all these countries, relationships is the cause of their happiness.
Hmm. Really interesting. Another thing, I guess, is about expectations. I guess we often hear that if we have expectations, we're going to be disappointed. You say it's not that we have expectations. It's that they're, well, in other words, often unrealistic, and that can lead to much of our unhappiness.
Yes, exactly. So more and more over the last couple of years, I'm paying attention to the expectations, because expectations are a significant determinant of how happy we are. So, for example, if my expectation is to be happy all the time, now I could say to myself, look, I'm an expert on happiness. I've studied it for 20 years. I should be happy all the time. This is a sure way to becoming unhappy, because it's an unrealistic expectation. There is no person who experiences a constant high. You know, it reminds me when I was teaching a class on happiness. I was having lunch one day, and a student came to me and said, may I join you for lunch? And I said, sure. And he sat down, and then he said, Paul, I hear you're teaching a class on happiness. And I said, yeah, that's right. And he said, you know, two of my roommates are taking your class. And I said, that's great. And then he said, but now, Tal, when you're teaching this class, you've got to watch out. And I said, what? And he said, Tal, you've got to be careful. And I said, why? And he said, because if I see you unhappy, I'll tell my roommates. And, you know, and I told my students the following day in class, you know, the last thing in the world I want you to think is that I experience a constant high, or that you, by the end of the semester, will always be happy. That's an unrealistic expectation. We all experience sadness and disappointment and envy and anger. You know, these are part of being human, part of being alive. And once we accept these emotions, in other words, once we have realistic expectations of what our life can and ought to look like, we open ourselves to a lot more happiness.
And we'll move along to Luis in Hialeah. Hi.
Yeah. Hello, doctor. I wanted to ask you, because I've been diagnosed with acute psychosis 40 years ago. I have a brain disorder, but I've tried self-help books to be happy. None of them has ever worked, okay? In your book, do you have anything for somebody like me who has a brain disorder? But usually people like me are not thought of when they write books.
Positive psychology can help us experience more moments of happiness. However, when it comes to the experience of psychosis or some extreme cases of neurosis, then positive psychology can help, but it's not the answer. Then professional help, clinical psychologists or psychiatrists are in a much better position and are much more knowledgeable about the situation and can possibly help. What I can say, though, is that, you know, our life comprises moments, and in most moments in our lives, not all, but in most moments in our lives, we do have a choice. So even right now, at this very moment, I can choose to, what I focus on, you know, I can choose to focus on the wonderful meal that Didi and my aunt and I are going to have next week. And that contributes to my well-being. I can focus on you know the front page of the news, and that will affect my happiness in a different way. So even with psychosis or neurosis, we still have those moments when we can choose. And if we have more and more of these moments, we can become happier, even if by a little bit.
What about people who seem to revel in adversity? They always have a hurricane going on around them, and they seem to enjoy it.
Well,
is that a form of happiness?
Yes. So if they enjoy it, then so be it. Then they're happy, right?
You know, right.
In a different way than most of us would be, but they are. I mean, the more concerning phenomenon to me is people who have the potential to be happy, but not consciously, subconsciously make the choice not to be happy, and you know, it reminds me of one of my favorite stories in a book by Dan Millman called The Path of the Peaceful Warrior, and in his book Millman talks about Sam, who's a construction worker, and you know, every day Sam goes to work on the construction site, and at noon sits down with his colleagues. And they take out their lunch boxes, and every day, no exception, Sam opens up his lunch box and says, "Oh no, not again! Not peanut butter and jelly again!" Every day for months, until finally, one of his friends says to him, "Sam, enough already with this complaining. Just tell your wife to make you another sandwich." And Sam says, "My wife? I'm not married. I make my own sandwiches." And you know, in the same way, we very often make our own sandwiches by the choices that we make. And we have a lot more choice than we think about what kind of ingredients we put into our sandwich every day. And we just need to take a step back and be mindful of the choices that we make. You know, this researcher, just as another example, showing that even the way we sit or stand has an effect on our well-being. So Amy Cuddy from Harvard Business School shows that even 2 minutes of what she calls a power posing, and that is, you know, sitting with our shoulders back, you know, in a proud position, or you know, we can learn from yoga, standing in a proud posture. Even 2 minutes of that actually affects our chemistry. Again, this is a choice that we can make at almost every moment in our life, and choose the kind of ingredients we put into our sandwiches.
Mm. Well, we've been speaking with Tal Ben-Shahar. He's an expert on happiness. He's a former professor of positive psychology at Harvard, a psychologist, teacher, author, lecturer, and his latest book is entitled Choose the Life You Want, 101 Ways to Create Your Own Road to Happiness. He'll be giving 3 seminars on habits of happiness, February 16th in Boca, February 17th in North Miami Beach, February 18th in Palm Beach, and the information is at habitsofhappiness.org. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Bonnie. Thank you, Joseph, for having me. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Our pleasure. And thanks for being with us. We hope you got some happiness. Happy. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical direction by Michael Stock. Online producer is Paul Leary. We have free audio archives and program downloads at our website. That's WLRN.org. More information and links at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow's program begins with Dr. Deborah Phillips, author of How to Fall Out of Love. Also, an interview with actress and author Angelica Houston. And the calendar on this day in 1906, 108 years ago, the birth of actor Lon Chaney in Oklahoma City. He first achieved stardom portraying Lenny Small in Of Mice and Men. In 1939. He played the Wolfman in 1941 and was also in High Noon with Gary Cooper. And on this day in 1961, 53 years ago, the birth of political strategist George Stephanopoulos in Fall River, Massachusetts. He was a Rhodes Scholar and a college wrestler. And one more on this day in 2005, 9 years ago, Prince Charles of Wales announces his engagement to Camilla Parker Bowles, now known as the Duchess of Cornwall. So we leave with alleged words from Camilla Bowles to the late Princess Diana, who confronted her about the affair with Charles. Quote from Bowles, "Diana, you've got everything you ever wanted. You've got all the men in the world falling in love with you, and you've got two beautiful children. What more do you want?" Must have been a tense moment. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned now for Here and Now from NPR News.
This is not...